But in his good faith effort, he's prosecuted.
But now the commission has to close its eyes to information that it knows. It says, my God, you should have never been doing that. It's a violation of the rule. I didn't know. Well, that's your defense, and they may or may not file a complaint. But do they have to mask themselves and pretend they don't know this information? And how are they going to investigate it or not investigate it at a later point?
I think, Mike, the point to your example, like the if somebody's wife is fundraising and it's improper and everybody knows it, the commission, unless it's totally out in left field, hears of it on itself and brings a complaint before the person comes in and asks, or the complaint would be brought to somebody else. I mean, the point here to me is if your wife is fundraising and you come in and you say, my wife is fundraising, is this proper? Even though you may be stupid and know that it's not proper, should they be able to turn around and prosecute you on your own volunteered statements? I mean, it seems to me...
Well, but the other side of the coin is the guy going, Jesus, I better do this because I think we're going to get caught. I'm going to call him up and say, by the way...
That's where the good faith is. That was Laureato's suggestion. That's where good faith... And again, it's one more thing to be litigated. It's not, you know, it's not an automatic curtain.
And if he feels like he's going to be caught, it means he thinks they're going to find out about it some other way. That's what that statement means.
Well, I know that, but...
They're still going to find out about the other means. They can still investigate through the other means. Well, that was his fear. His fear is they're going to find out.
So this way, by calling up there, insulates him from being caught. So
No. If they find out by the other means, they're going to find out.
Can they investigate? Could they deliberately use it, say, that's a lead, and say, gee, if this is true, can we now ask other people? Or do they have to pretend they don't know the information and wait until somebody knocks on their door and says, by the way, so-and-so is lobbying?
Well, my belief is if you do otherwise, if you allow this information to be used against them, you're just making it into a different kind of advice. I can guarantee you that nobody here is going to go and ever submit the information to them. You'd have to be, you know, completely stupid to go do that and have it used against you. So it's just a choice of two ways of doing advice. Either one's livable. I think it's better to have one where you can come forward with actual facts and give them actual facts.
We've kind of had a lot of discussion. Is there a motion on this section?
Can I request for a motion to put good faith in it?
No. Let's people...
Well, I don't really like this language, nothing against the author, but the language to me is too much verbiage in it. Some of it should be in commentary, but I basically think that, I think Lloyd and I agree on this, that it seems like, I agree that somebody can't be absolved just because they asked for advice.
Right. Take the section out then.
But just a minute, on as far as your first concern, the portion that I think would fit into, as I hear your concern, is the sentence that begins, the commission represents the legislature through the end. Conceivably, that could be commentary.
Right.
But I think we're dealing with two types of requests for advice. One is to cover what you've been doing, and one is to cover what you're doing.
And there was a suggestion by Mr. Gagin to cover that point.
Right. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think I'm going to move that this language, that you're right, the first sentence here, information, starting with information, ending with 2461550, be put in place of for the existing language.
I will object for just
okay. Discussion.
I think we should vote, Mr. Chairman. We all know.
Mr. Miller?
Well, I understand the point that Mr. Joseph is making, and it's a valid point, but at the same time, I have a hard time. I agree, people just aren't going to call in. They have valid questions that they want. The gray areas, they just aren't sure of. And, you know, it's like, you know, self-incrimination, basically, is what it is.
Mr. Davis.
It might give them an incentive to really know the law.
But there are areas in this law which are gray areas. There is.
Well, I don't think the commission is going to prosecute somebody in a gray area.
Sorry, guys.
Yep.
Let's just have a vote. Okay, we're so close. Let's just vote.
Okay. I would add.
I don't think we should vote. I think we need to take a report.
Is there something in between?
Well, yeah, that's where I think, and I think the language.
Why don't we divide the two? You think his language is in between, just inserting good faith on line 14?
Well, I think it covers the area that Senator Jones.
Well, there's one other additional point that Mr. Keene had made for Senator Jones's point on the difference between prospective and current.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
There's no crime against something prospective.
What was yours?
Mr.
Chairman, I have a.
It would not preclude a complaint brought. Based on conduct after the request of advice was rendered.
Mr. Chairman,
which is essentially if you go ahead and ignore
the senators go in there and vote, and that these guys work out some compromise language to give us when we get back.
Good
idea. We move it.
Well,
we move it.
With Mr. Johnson,
you're
there. Motion can you guys work it?
I don't think we have a middle ground. This is the one on 415, the reinstatement of 415. The section that would not die.
And it reads even worse.
Yeah, shorter than it was, I think.
We're turning back page.
No, then you're a lawyer.
That's right. That's
right. Now, 415 isn't in there. Well, 415 is the one that got deleted and that Michael Josephson persuaded you guys to put back.
Reporters to, employer to report.
Employer's obligation to report.
When we, in our bill, I believe we only list the source, category B sources, right? We only list them as a source.
That's my understanding.
Therefore, it doesn't seem consistent to have the class B people fill out the report. They're only a source, so it would only be class A's that would fill out the report.
Sounds good to me.
Well, now wait a minute, let's think, we don't, somebody else is making the determination, not the employer, whether they're they don't know if they're a class A or class B. But we're making the determination. Mm-hmm. So do we want to have an acknowledgement of the source of information from the employer?
Okay, okay. I fill out the form and I believe it's class B, so I send it in to the commission and they look at it and they want more information. I send more information and they decide it's a class B, so therefore they won't need any more. But if I look at it and decide it's a class A, then they could ask for more information at the same time, then send this form to my employer, which
right.
they have
right.
decided
right.
to be a
right.
class A.
Right.
Right. That's how
right.
I'm going to work.
Right. But they may need the information if they determine that you're wrong. You're not talking
well,
about
class
Well,
once B, they determine know that it is a class A, then they would fall under the first part.
Oh, I cribbed this from existing language, and I did forget that you'd taken the source number.
I don't think, if we're not going to list how much money these are, they're just a source, and I don't think we should make it fill out the form if they're a B.
Because once the commission has decided it's class A,
right.
then everything else would kick in, and they would send the form to the employer.
Right.
So, John, how would you amend this?
I think if you take out the second sentence, you're pretty well covered.
and not the last sentence. The report must contain all information.
Oh, no, you still want that. You know, one thing that troubled me about this section before and still troubles me is there's no sanctions. And I don't know how you can have sanctions. This is an area where obviously the LEC is out of its bounds since this person isn't even remotely connected to the legislature. And you can't really put criminal sanctions on something like this.
This, of course, ultimately is the problem with the campaign contributors who contribute more than $250. They have that little yellow sheet.
Yeah,
and when your dad gives you $500 and lives in Illinois, and you know I'm sitting there, should I send a yellow form to my dad because he has no idea what all of this is about? Mm-hmm. And nobody, the APOC is never gonna, you know, I don't know. If you ask them, I'm sure they'll tell you they just stack them up in a little pile. Okay, I'll get one back. What's discussion? What's the desire of the committee?
Can we have A
regulus
without the B?
Sure.
Take out sentence two.
I would say, a person who has provided compensation for personal services to a legislator or legislative assistant who qualifies as a Category A source under 2464-100E shall file a report to the commission concerning the compensation paid. The report must contain all information required by the commission.
Right. So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Any objection to
as
the motion?
Amended.
If not, as amended, new 415.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duncan has demanded a sectional analysis.
We might as well talk about that a little bit. I've had a discussion with the co-chair of finance and also with Mr. Deerdorf and my staff, and maybe we ought to just, if anybody has other ideas, for good or for bad, this bill technically is going to have to be treated like some of our budget bills tonight. We're going to take a marked up copy of this bill right from this room, so don't hold people up all night, run it across, read it across the technical session. Meanwhile, Mr. Gagin will be taking all the changes down to Mr. Deerdorf, who will be taking as much time as he can tonight and tomorrow, but more methodically integrating the changes into a clean bill.
We have a clean bill. As of right now, we have a clean bill. So incorporating the changes that you make tonight, unless they're really voluminous, should not take much time.
Mr. Deerdorf would like an hour or two tonight to kind of clean up a little bit, and he knows that that's not going to quite fit with reading it across. The next problem, of course, is that the Finance Committee is scheduled for 8 or 9 tomorrow morning. In all fairness, for practical purposes, they will have never seen the bill before they sit down at the table first thing morning. But they will have a clean bill in front of them tomorrow morning. There is a concern by some members that the bill, we're talking about the process here tomorrow morning, we will have a clean bill in finance, but they will have probably no chance of reading a clean bill until they sit down at the table. Apparently, there's some concern on the part of co-chair and many other members that they not be, that there's not a full amount of time then to read the bill.
No, I think it's a reasonable concern.
Yeah.
Right, I think you should get as much time as I had on the budget.
24 hours.
I can get 24 hours.
And I think they're suggesting
they could be later tomorrow night.
Well, they're suggesting that they get more time, but for our part, I think the request for a table of contents, sectional analysis, and I've suggested to my staff a one or two pager of the highlights of the bill and where to find it in the bill. If you're interested in pay, we can put that page number one, page.
Okay, let me ask this question. When are you guys going to be done tonight?
Mr. Gagin, we haven't heard from you.
I don't have that much.
And the House guys
have
that much.
They have some.
Well, we covered some of them already this morning. Yeah. I don't know what.
If we call it like an 8 o'clock technical,
no problem.
I think that'd be fine.
Perfect.
I've got a sectional. I will have a sectional.
We'll be.
Okay.
We'll be.
I will have a sectional of probably 10 pages long by tomorrow, and I think it hits the high points of the bill.
Okay. I'm still concerned, and maybe I can do it with my staff, that there be a one or two pager of what we call highlights, and I know what they are, I think, and that they know where to find them in the bill. The other wrinkle here is I'll probably need tonight, if I could, the latest clean, so the page numbers. Yeah, I was planning on being there, and anyone else, frankly, I would invite all of us, including members of the House, Mike, I would invite any and all of us to be there tomorrow to answer questions and talk about what we've done and characterize the whole process, the whole bill, and then I'm sure there'll be some specific questions and maybe a kind of a highlight in where to find stuff in the bill they can read along.
At a table of contents in front of
The table of contents, John, that's on a machine that can be.
I have no idea where that came from.
Okay, who did the table of contents?
Your door, Christy.
I thought it came from Wilson and now Lauren's white it out.
It's not
on
a computer.
It's not on a computer, right.
Okay.
Shouldn't be.
Okay. I will take responsibility for table of contents and try to get some highlights together. So, but we, in addition to a section, we need just a table of contents on how the bill breaks up with major subheads by patient. Okay.
The middle ground, I think, Senator Fakes, that you ordered us to find.
Very good.
527 is Michael Josephson's language, minus one sentence that was exhortatory, and maybe can go in commentary if there is any commentary. 526 was Jeannie's suggestion that you be allowed to ask, if you think you were going to incriminate yourself by asking, that you be allowed to ask for an anonymous opinion. So hopefully if you put the two of them together.
We don't allow that now. That is absolutely forbidden in our current ethics policy.
I know.
I mean, this
we
is
don't allow. We've never had the issue of using information. I would always have assumed, I mean, the issue never arose, but I would have assumed that if somebody came to us voluntarily and incriminated themselves as part of a request for an advisory opinion, that the committee wouldn't have turned around and slapped a complaint on it. This language specifically says that you can do that, so I think.
That's
awful. That's inviting people to be.
That's unethical.
Well, it's.
I just. That whole concept. Maybe it's because we've been operating for 6 years on a whole different thing, but we have sent opinions back. Just sent them back when we felt that they weren't asking about themselves or asking about somebody else. Because even though it really is, in this case, for yourself, it invites trying to, you know, me get the goods on Senator Fake somehow, and, you know, something I think that she may be doing, and then getting an opinion, and then going to the press about somebody else's behavior.
If you don't like the anonymous opinion, then you're going to have to squarely confront the issue. Either you do allow the commission to turn things that people submit against them, or you don't.
So let me pass this out. This is from the APOC statutes. It's number little g in the right column.
Why don't we just adopt APOC's advice?
Okay. This is different. This says if you rely on an advisory opinion that they can't go after you, and I mean that's a given. This is about an advisory opinion. This isn't about information that you give APOC in connection with an advisory opinion. It's a whole different animal.
But it says a person may request an advisory opinion. First of all, that's what it says. A person or a group may request an advisory opinion. That's A. B. Tells you what you're supposed to do there, how you do it.
Oh, yeah. I guess the relevant section here was whether you want to be over in little g.
Yeah.
Little g does not cover this situation.
that you're talking about. You've already gotten your opinion.
Little G says you can rely on the opinion, which is
Oh, then you act on it, and then if you act on it according to that, can they go file a complaint?
Yeah, of course not.
We already have that. We have another section. Okay. Okay.
Advisory opinion press and advisory opinions are public record. Trouble with that, if there's scandals and that, then let's change it. But I don't think you've got unanimous consent here. I mean, I'm willing to go with the public, but it just doesn't seem fair to people. I mean, if this is a brand new thing and people are asking, we want them to ask, we want this to be a lovable, friendly sort of commission at first.
Yeah.
We've got to make it so people feel comfortable.
This, to me, that's the starting point. No different than our ethics committee, where we came back and we said, you know, we protected people's actions that happened more than 2 years before the complaint. And we did that. But you know, that hasn't worked good because we weren't able to operate.
Right.
They come back and say, we want a 5-year statute of limitation, not a 2-year.
Right.
Here they come back and say, you know, we had to shut our eyes to 4 cases in the last year. We need the tools. They come back.
Right.
They said that. That would be a classic case where we would say, we'll give you the tools.
So I'm going to go with Representative Miller on this, which is our current language, right?
Our current language, although I would suggest adding the sentence about future.
Right.
And also, I like the business about good faith.
Yeah,
right,
good faith.
Good faith
I had put in there, so it's already there.
Let's start with that.
What are you doing?
Okay, we're, John.
Page 59 of the new draft. It's subsection 527. It's around 59 or 60.
I don't have good faith in mine. On line 14.
No, it's good faith. I've got the most recent one.
Why don't you read those changes that you suggest, the two changes?
Okay, the one is good faith, which is already in there, is mine. Concerning this subsection does not preclude the commission from acting on a complaint concerning the subject of a person's good faith complaint, a good faith request for advice, if the complaint is brought by another person. And I had language written elsewhere, and I don't know where it is now. But it would be along the lines of, if the complaint is brought by another person, or if the complaint arises out of activity that takes place after the advice is requested.
Wait a minute. Or if the complaint, on line 15.
Arises out of activity.
Brought by another person.
Or if the complaint arises out of, maybe conduct is a better word.
Yeah, conduct is getting it before I actually.
Conduct.
Arising after.
Arising after.
Out of conduct.
What's after conduct?
Taking place. Conduct isn't. Yeah, I guess conduct takes place. Taking place after the advice is requested. So that
running out of room.
Go up the side.
Running down the column.
So move, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion on that motion. And John, we will give you latitude if you find your other better, if the language you originally constructed you think is better. Do people understand where we are there and what that is? Okay. Is there any objection to the adoption of the motion for the amendment? If not, so adopted. Before we leave the topic, though, it was pointed out to me on page 58.
Excuse me, tell Representative Finkelstein what we did on that section, he'll be pleased.
Say okay, I agree.
We protect. We're not going to tell him.
All right.
We won. Anything's fine.
Okay. There, we were talking about what kind of opinion, John, formal or informal?
Which one?
That we just did.
Both of them.
Both.
Both.
Okay. Now, what about the language on page 58.
Section
523.
That needs to go. That was. I had left that in until you approved 527.
I have deleted it.
Oh, fine. Fine.
So let's reiterate. Right. The past motion was to delete number 3, and that makes it consistent with our latest action.
Yeah, mine has no 3 anymore.
Okay.
I think you had already adopted 527, and you were just revisiting it today.
I'm sorry, I'm late.
You're not going to ask about this? Or
no. Okay. Can you just tell me where we're at? In the process of getting to where we are.
You bet.
Where are we?
Well.
Just what's ahead. I don't care what's behind.
Okay. I believe we have just now finished the Josephson added list. Is that correct?
Not correct.
Oh, no, we haven't. No, we haven't. Okay, let's return to number 34. Okay, this was change commentary 525B to 527. I've lost what that means. Change commentary.
Yes, it just means, I don't know.
Do you know what that means, John?
Well, it said his commentary, there wasn't a 527. So he's saying the 525B commentary should be moved to 527. But since your 527 is now different from his 527, it'll have to be rewritten either by him or by us.
Okay. Let's make a note.
He picked up a copy, by the way, of the bill, and he also picked up a copy of the notes that I was scribbling on this thing where it said commentary. So hopefully he will be able to do it.
Okay.
Except for constituency. When you give that to me, I'll incorporate it.
Okay. Page 61, line 13. Add a new section. Commentary and guidelines. In all matters related to this, the commission shall refer to and interpret provisions consistent with the commentary and guidelines.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative
Pickleson.
Oh, wait,
there's
some
more. No, I don't have it. I prefer not to do that. I don't have an old bill with me, so I have to stare.
Let's just hold it.
There's no point in backing up to it.
It's cold.
Your thought?
That's what we
need. This is mine.
Yeah, I've checked to see if mine was still full of that one.
Oh, it's mine. I'm introducing a bill tonight. Yeah, this is my bill. It's been brought in 3 days ago. I'm making them 1:30 in the state of Paris. They're not true, but
5:32, I think you lost it.
That was it.
Oh, okay. I knew 5. Okay, it is section 532.
It's 532. By the general provision thing.
Yeah.
This would be a new section proposed on page 61, line 13.
It's not right.
And it's not right. That doesn't look like the place to put in a new section.
No. It should go at any rate. This section, if it's going to go, should go back in the 900s. Maybe 970 or something like that.
Okay. We'll interpret the amendment as where appropriate, a new section to be added. Commentary and guidelines and all matters relating to this chapter. The commission shall refer to and interpret provisions consistent with the commentary and guidelines.
Here.
Representative Pickleson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my problem is that I never looked at the commentary. And I don't think this committee's never looked at the commentary. So there's two possibilities. The committee certainly has to discuss the commentary. So two possibilities. One is that the letter of intent will accompany the bill and will be enacted, in which case it is essentially part of this. It's attached, and they're going to have it in front of them. The other possibility is that the legislature doesn't pass the letter of intent, in which case it won't be, and this will be moot. So I don't think it makes any difference. And since we haven't had a chance to consider adopt, at least at this point, the commentary, I'd suggest we at least remove the words commentary and leave the guidelines in.
Oh, it's Representative Pickleson. That thing is wonderful. makes all the difference in the world. It makes the thing livable and readable.
Right, but this committee, I mean, you understand what I'm saying. I'm not doubting that. True.
But I think this has to be in there to give that commentary and those guidelines the force of law for the commission. I mean, it's a flag for the commission, and I think you'll see your finance committees looking at that thing. I mean, that is as important as this, as far as I'm concerned.
What are guidelines?
That's the beginning of the bill. Principles, I think, is what we said.
I don't think that's what he means. I don't know what he's talking about exactly.
What's the book called? What's the title of our reprinted document? Does anybody have it? Open have it.
Mr. Chairman.
Melvin.
The guidelines are a separate section, and it's called the guidelines and commentary. It's all one.
That's what we're talking about.
Then. Right.
Is it called guidelines and commentary?
Yes.
Okay. Commentary.
This should be reversed then.
Okay. This should, guidelines and commentary.
This should be reversed. Under discussion, if we don't do this, we have no business passing the commentary guidelines. And if it means tying this is we want to make damn sure what's in them, we all ought to like pay attention. I don't think passing this bill out at all removes the possibility of continuing to perfect the commentary guidelines. And unfortunately, it'll have to catch up.
And in some cases, we have been following the commentary guidelines pretty closely in working with this bill to change some language in the bill to track
the commentary
guidelines.
We've even amended the commentary.
And just as a matter of our work, boy, I mean, I think we sent probably a dozen, maybe 10 or 12 things to the commentary.
Oh, yeah.
And so why do we do that if we don't want it? And why do we want it if we don't want the commission to pay attention? And that's all we're asking them to. It still is not statute. It's we want them to know it's there to utilize in interpreting the statutes. Discussion. A motion.
I move we adopt the amendment on page 61, line 13, on commentary and guidelines.
Guidelines and commentary?
Guidelines and commentary.
All those in favor of the motion, raise your hand. Opposed? Motion carries. One objection. Page 69. Line 29. On to page 70, lines 1 and 2. Findings and recommendations. Delete and change to... Okay, this is on the payment.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
And Senator Fisher also requires a financial statement from the Josephson Institute today.
$84,000.
No, no.
Oh.
The business financial statement of the Josephson Institute.
It's filed with what?
Their
corporation or?
Yeah.
If you don't like something, attack the source. That's part of the process, I guess.
I guess.
I changed my mind. I think we might have an easier time in the House than the Senate after all.
See, the Senate works differently.
Yeah.
The Senate works in secret, underground ways.
Yeah, Joseph said we're very deceitful.
Well, at least we do a deal.
He said, you are. He says, you guys are much more honest than we are.
But you take so much time.
He says, you're honest. You're honest.
That's true.
Okay, so now we're talking about the phraseology of when you can pay money relative to exoneration.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Pegues.
I think the committee's feeling was very clear here that if you were exonerated, you should have your fees paid, and that's what this says, and that's not what Josephson's change says. And I don't understand why if somebody is exonerated, and again, when we're talking exonerated, we're not just talking about acquitted for lack of evidence, why he's so begrudging even that.
The interesting thing is, as I recall, Mr. Joe, and I apologize, he's not here, but as I recall his own presentation, not just last night, but before, I thought he agreed with that statement. If they're exonerated, they should be compensated. And maybe he's not knowing that we didn't say shall. We purposely said should.
Yeah.
That we did not demand that they be paid. We just said that they should be paid.
Mr. Jim, his reasoning on down below would be something, in cases such as his reasoning occurred, would be a case where the should wouldn't apply if the commission would
definitely not the 5-10 of the best lawyers in the country to come up here to exonerate a senator and then have them, you know, be paid their legal fees.
Let's see. You're
Can you say something about reasonable?
You're arguing with the rationale, or you're agreeing with the rationale?
I'm agreeing with the rationale.
That somebody will fight extremely hard for exoneration, knowing they will.
But it doesn't create a legal right to recover legal fees, as he says. Whatever legal right there exists, you know, I don't think there is a legal right to it.
Here's a technical problem, of course, with this, is that the commission isn't paying anybody's legal bills. So you're not telling here, this doesn't mean, it doesn't say the LEC should pay.
It's how about the chairman that they should recommend that the legal fees be
paid? Well, that was the fight we had. We didn't want that.
I thought we did put something about reasonable.
Reasonable legal fees
be paid.
I think fall apart in public funds.
Oh, reasonable, yeah, okay.
I mean, and it should be reasonable. I think it's covered.
I think we did a clever job.
We did good.
Chairman, you did good.
Well, I don't know. It was a group process, as I recall, like trying to thread the way here. Okay, is there a motion on that?
Motion on what?
Oh, no motion? I don't know. I didn't see it.
Jeez, I thought we were into something else.
Okay. Oh, God, this is great. Oh, Jesus. My previous article on Gardner, the moose farms. The Coghill rule is the stupider the idea, the more likely it's to be approved. Oh, Jesus.
Anybody here vote for it?
Not me. Jones did.
You ever got to the house floor?
Oh, that's right. You're a moose farmer.
Those are your people. I don't think they're going to like the saddle myself.
They said moose farms are not feasible and it passes. Fish farms are feasible and it's not passing. That's our Alaska legislature. That's the Alaska legislature. It calls it a stupid Senate and everything. Oh, Jesus.
Wait a minute. Okay. There was something else brought to me here on transition language. Where's the
necessary? It may not be. I proposed that as a suggestion, and they chose to just accept the letter.
We have some transition language. I don't know. Did you want to do something without Mike, or do you want to wait for Mike?
I think we can do without Mike. I agree. I have some other things.
Okay.
Let's go to the House.
All these things, I'm not saying I completely agree with you, but I promise people I'd bring them up. The first one was the idea of removing the staff from the bill in large part, but in everything but the one-year ban on employment of the lobbyists afterwards. I've gone through and I try to see both sides of it. For the sake of discussion, I'll move that we remove staff except for the one-year ban on lobbying after employment.
Should we just vote now?
Yeah. All those in favor, raise your hand. All those opposed, motion fails.
Second one is...
May I make one final comment? That is not to say that we might not have another assistant employee discussion. I think Lauren has some notes on where those appear. But and keep in mind, the LEC is going to determine what is a legislator. Anyway, there's a process for deciding who is a legislative assistant.
Okay, the second one is Representative Boyer feels pretty strongly that we should move the date that you close off fundraising from the day of the election till later. And there's a lot of arguments for it, but his basic thing is that it helps the challenger, helps the incumbent too much, not allow that. The only way he ever beat an incumbent was that he risked money on it, he used up money, he borrowed money, and then he was able to raise money afterwards, and that he would have lost that election otherwise. And certainly an endorsement of that situation is that the fact that every incumbent won in the last general election. And I'm not sure I agree with his view of December 31st, but we did at one point talk about moving it back to the date of certification of the election, which occurs like 2 weeks afterwards.
But what's that saying? That's saying, I won, pay me. Yeah.
Well, that's a view of it, but there's also the reality that the more you you limit that period, the better it helps the incumbents, because the challengers who are better aided, the challengers are the bigger risk.
But they get to raise money during the session, and we don't. That's the counterpoint to that one. They get 4 months, but we're down here being total jerks. They can be anywhere.
Losing votes, probably.
Yeah, losing votes on every newspaper article.
Okay, no one likes this idea?
Look, let me say.
And
it's
a lot
just
of this,
that we've been worked it over and over.
And this is not necessarily a common practice. And we all bring different experiences.
Yeah, I have
never put any of my own money into a race. I have never had a deficit. And I've always finished on the day of the election in the black. I'm not sympathetic, and I've had tough races, and like everybody else has had tough races. Some of it is how you manage your money, when you spend your money, and how effective fundraiser you are. And it doesn't have to be. If you know that the date cutoff is, your spending, your raising, changes accordingly.
Okay, well I'll drop it. The next one is on the legislative stage. I'm not sure that's the right term, and. Someone direct me to where we delete the legislative stay in the back.
In the deletions here.
And Max is very concerned about that. In fact, very understates his concern.
Well, he's the one that admitted it to Josephson and got himself in this trouble.
Right. Well, he shouldn't have said a word about it.
Well,
that's
that was ethical.
Well,
what page is that?
I don't know what page. Oh, here it is. Page 86.
It's not unethical to self-incriminate.
Well, he admits how bad he was, and now he wants to make sure he can still be bad.
I talked to him for 20 minutes on this, and he says he's never heard of a case of it being abused. If someone knows of cases, you know, he thinks that's, you know, it'd be worth noting, and that he thinks he suggests the alternative that instead of eliminating it, you just go and put a couple sentences in here that this cannot be used in bad faith, it cannot be used as a means to delay
proceedings. Can I give you an alternative here? Can I give you some rebuttal? There are 111 attorneys in the Alabama legislature, House and Senate. 111 attorneys, real live lawyers. They don't have a legislative stay or any of its equivalent in Alabama. There's no other state in the union that does that for its lawyers. Well, now, I don't understand why you guys think you should have this special thing when no other lawyer in the country
gets
lawyer.
It.
I thought you were.
No, I'm not a lawyer. And
Max.
They, because there's more than one. And there's true, other states may not have the same situation.
No other state.
But Alaska is a different state, too.
Oh, jeez.
No, the circumstances are different. You cannot go home.
They are not different.
You can go in other states, you can be a legislator, and you can carry on your other activities at the same time. Generally, most states, the distance is such that it's a place that you can do some commuting to a degree. You can't realistically, they try to. I mean, I remember when I worked for Joseph, and he used to go back for various things and try to pull off hearings on a Friday, and he'd go back, but it's just not realistic in most things. And what you do when you eliminate this is it makes it much harder for a lawyer to be a member of the legislature. I mean, practically speaking, some people would say, well, you can plan their cases to work around it. Well, you can't plan all cases, you know.
But they can go to the judge and ask for whatever you ask for, just like any other lawyer does who has something come up, or the family vacation, or his mother gets ill or something.
And sometimes we keep thinking about the guy's going to miss his court date. We have had more people excused for who knows what reasons. You can get excused from the legislature to go to court.
Yeah.
Right.
People miss days in the legislature all the time. And they can go back, and that's their choice. Their constituents are suffering from that choice, but it's not happening now.
I'm not seeing what the need is, especially when I know that.
Well, I'm not really aware, and I don't know if anyone's aware of any problem with legislative stay prior to this.
There are problems. There are stories of people getting signed on to cases by significant folks for $500.
I think we can avoid that. If we can put in language here that precluded that.
I can't support something that no other jurisdiction has.
You want to make your motion?
Okay, I'll move that we retain language and add some good faith language that says it cannot be, you know, used as an excuse, etc.
All those in favor, raise your hand. All those opposed, motion carries.
Okay. Now, page 45. I think I can convince you this one. This is just me. This isn't anyone else. I can't remember if we removed this or not.
Was this like committee courtesy?
What's that?
That we give a member more due consideration.
As a sore thumb.
What?
It just shouldn't be in here. It says that you should, you going to have to tell these people, this is what this says, that you're calling up to get them to do something or other and resolve this case with a constituent. You got to tell them. I mean, it's almost absurd. And by the way, Mr. Jones, I expect you, even though I'm calling, but even though I'm a state representative, I expect you to make an independent judgment. You have to say those words.
No, you don't. I said it. I've said it this week. I've said it with Ada this week. I say this all the time.
Why do we have to say what's law? I don't think we have a responsibility to tell them what the law is. We have a responsibility not to put undue pressure on all the other things, but I don't think it just sort of it gets into the realm of the absurd telling legislators words they're going to have to repeat when, I mean, that was my problem here. This is something, I don't think we should have anything in this bill that's going to be regularly violated. This is going to be regularly violated. People are not going to be, legislators make hundreds of calls in a week on behalf of constituents, and they are not going to be always saying, making a statement every time they make a call.
Okay, one of the things that I think in my list of notes, I had noticed this, and that was the one I put Miranda rights down, whether you have to do that. I think the discussion that ensued was we removed E from the penalties.
Right.
So I understand that it's removed from penalties, but this is going to be the subject to ridicule on the floor of the House, and I'm not going to be able to defend it. And it's such a small thing. I hate to think of 20 minutes of debate over something, having to read the Miranda rights to a state employee.
Okay.
I think we've done great in the rest of this. We've really been strict on this. And this is a very touchy subject with members because people are very concerned about protecting their rights to go and make cases on behalf of constituents. We've gotten to a touchy area, and now we're adding insult to injury here by saying not only do you have to be careful and watch all these things and you know, be very limited in what you do, you got to go and like make the statement every time you...
But Dave, when a legislator calls a staff person or a clerk or something, you know, a director level or something, even those guys, they don't want to take a call from the legislator because, honey, they're nervous about it. There's a knot in the stomach kind of thing. I mean, they don't know if they're going to get yelled at. I mean, we are abusive as a group to public officials. Just look at the polling results and how they think of it. And that comes from the fact that we are perceived as being abusive. When we call a regulatory agency and try to do something for a constituent, I have colleagues in the Senate, it doesn't matter if the constituent is wrong. They want to force the public official to change their decision. It doesn't matter. Whether the constituent, you can't even make an independent decision. I mean, if the constituent is breaking the law or violating some regulation, it doesn't matter. They will browbeat that state employee to get a change of decision. And that's what this is.
I understand. That's what this whole section is about. I completely agree. But this little subsection doesn't make that better.
Can I offer a suggestion? I mean, and we've done this before. It's a consideration. The way we've changed it now, by removing the sanctions, by changing shall to should, that paragraph, like some others we've done, could be moved up front. For example, on page 8, it could fit as a new D under principle of independent judgment.
That's fine.
In C, we talked about shall exercise the powers and
rights,
may not use public authority to punish friends and reward.
That's great. I can live with that. But this is one of the things we do the worst, David. Yeah. This is one of our biggest violations.
Right, and I agree with all that.
So
and we
just can't eliminate it.
No, this doesn't have anything to do with those violations. We've put in here very strict language that talks about what you can and cannot do in defending constituents. But this is something on top of it. This is saying you got to make a statement to the people.
Well, I don't read it that way, but I like moving it up front.
A dozen shirts with hand marks on it.
Okay.
The dry cleaners.
Where? Now, what have you moved from where to where?
Subsection A.
I think dry
cleaners. I get
page 45.
And it comes right out.
The last line in C. A legislator may not use public authority simply to roar friends or public or hinder or punish enemies and opponents. And then if you go...
This is something I picked up along the way.
Now, you could rephrase it. You could say a legislator should not directly or indirectly intervene in administrative consideration action proceeding a legislator should explicitly convey to administrators involved, you know.
How about if we move it to the commentary?
No.
Let's,
major violation.
Let's have a motion. Is there a motion?
You want to move it to page A?
I would suggest that's one way of...
Page A, new sub C, under OD, under 060.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I move, we move, or relocate subsection E of 380 to page 8 under 060, a new little D.
But in discussion, on the motion, I would assume in the drafting of that should have passed, John, that it would be parallel construction in A, B, and C. We'd start out legislators and legislative employees should exercise their powers, that we would want to start it out like that, where you have legislative employees should convey to administrators, blah, blah, blah.
Legislators.
Legislators. In further discussion, all Penelope.
Just to make a point here, earlier on, it was determined that although it just said a legislator in this section, that the indirect part of it meant staff people. And I just wanted to make sure that if it's now going to be in section 8 and it's going to include legislators and legislative employees, that is not going to cause problems.
We just made that change. John,
it's not saying legislative employees.
John just.
Oh, I'm sorry.
John corrected me. I had said that. John just corrected me.
Okay,
so
thank you.
He noted that. All those in favor of moving to the principals, raise your hand. Opposed. One opposed. Opposed. One opposed. Motion carries. Move to principals. Okay.
Next is on representation, and the only question I had there was, and I know we went over and over this, but there was an argument made that we ought to go back to quasi-judicial hearings where the state is not a party. And I don't want to get into the whole thing again, but there is a simple choice between quasi-judicial hearings where the state is not a party versus what I think is our current language, which is adjudicatory nature.
I have no problem with that. We thought we were doing somebody a favor. You were going to go back and check with your others. I think we were waiting. They wanted quasi-judicial.
Well,
I don't think the group at last we talked had a problem with that. We just wanted.
Okay.
We thought we were helping.
Can I move a conceptual amendment then that will need John's help to fit it in? We should change to quasi-judicial hearings where the state is not a party. Somehow switch those words in for adjudicatory nature and then defining adjudicatory. You'll have to sort of finesse out.
I think the way you said it works fine.
Okay, I don't have the exact sense.
Did we get a page reference sold to that?
Page 33.
33. So, on page 33, we're talking about stuff down the lines. 24.
Subsection B.
Right. Subsection B. And was there another section? I thought there was.
It's in two places. Line 28.
28.
Are you changing? You're going to quasi judicial?
Yeah.
Well, now, if you change it to line 28. Is a quasi-judicial?
I think that
where both sides are separately represented.
I don't think you need that if you go to quasi-judicial.
I want to change that out.
You don't need to define adjudicatory nature if you use quasi-judicial.
I still don't understand that.
I would say unless the agency board or commission is acting quasi-judicially comma, and then you want to retain there is no reasonable basis.
In the state,
yeah.
Okay. Then I have one more on A.
Let's just, while we're here, let's just turn the page to make sure that we don't have another. Okay. I think we're clear on that.
Is it adopted or?
I'm sorry.
I moved it.
Is there any objection to the adoption of quasi-judicial on page 33 in lieu of adjudicatory nature? If not,
taking out the next sentence.
Yeah, and conforming amendments. If not, so adopted.
There you go. And I guess is there a way to include that language on where the state is not a party? That's from the second part of that.
Is it in there now?
No, but that was the language we'd come up with in the previous bill, which was quasi-judicial hearings where the state is not a party, instead of all this stuff about adjudicatory and no basis for the side represented by legislator has an unfair advantage. So all I'm trying to do now is reinsert, forgetting what else is there, just reinsert the words where the state is not a party.
Well, you've sort of got...
Yeah, I don't know what you need
Okay.
I mean, you've sort of got below the language from the House State Affairs Substitute, which would prohibit representation when the state is... I mean, these state or local license permit franchise grant loan and all
that. Okay, I'll withdraw. Then my last on this is... The A section is this part about you can't go to court. And Peter Gall is the leader in the world, as far as I know, of trying to get these restrictions in place. And I've talked to him and talked to him about this language, and he's unhappy with some of it. But this part, he couldn't even figure why it's in there. He doesn't believe that this is a problem or could be a problem. It's basically, I mean, I don't really know. We had a lot of discussions, and I've still never seen the problem of a legislator going to court. You know, it's a different branch of government, and if Peter thinks it's okay, I think it's okay, and I'd move to...
Where is that again?
A on page 33.
I thought we would do that.
Well, we did at one point, and
we resurrected it then.
We sort of went back and forth, but...
Now, what about the representative advisor consultant to persons regarding their actions against the state?
See, oh no! You know where are you now?
A.
Legislative
system. Oh, you're talking about the rest is may not be construed to prevent a legislator who is an attorney from representing criminal.
So if you got rid of this, you wouldn't need it. You wouldn't. If you got rid of this, you don't need this. This is
you're just saying a legislative system may not, for compensation, represent a person in legal action against the state where the state is the real party in interest.
Right.
Or receive compensation or any other benefit for acting as a representative to persons regarding their actions against the state. Now, is that different, Laura?
The problem here is someone who is an attorney is that if their particular kind of law is, say, personal injury, and they do traffic cases, the state comes up quite a bit, and that precludes them from being there forever. I mean, it's okay to be a criminal attorney. It's okay to work on these kinds of cases, but you can't do your specialty if you're a personal injury lawyer because state highways, state...
Larry just needs you for a couple of questions to ask the state affairs. That's why he's peeking in here. He just wants to have a few words with you. He's that's his last story to say or something.
State facilities, that sort of thing. So we're talking about attorneys with a particular kind of specialty will be precluded from doing it, or an interest in a particular specialty.
Right. On the other hand, you've got the case of the guy taking the Weiss case through the courts on mental health, and then does he have a problem, and then dealing with that on legislation. Although, you know, come to think of it, he would still be declaring his income as a Class A source of income from that group, and then he would might be restricted to work legislation dealing with the lawsuit.
Yeah, and the legal profession has a pretty strong code of ethics for, you know, these kind of conflicts too. I mean, the
so Peter doesn't have problems.
No, and doesn't think it should be in it. And I've never been completely clear what the implications are of this. We never had it in the previous ethics bills, and it's just hard to do something when we don't know the
what the problem is, and there may be future problems.
Yeah, I think Peter's big thing is section B.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's still not happy with B.
No, he's not happy with B. But you can't. But you cannot make Max and Max, Dave Donnelly, and Peter all happy. It's impossible.
And I don't think we should have to try.
No, no. Well, we're not, I'm not suggesting that. They will. If they're all unhappy, we might have.
I view BERT changes as perfecting language. Right. I think the same. We accomplish what we want to do in B. Well, I think it's just a call.
I'll move it. That we strike
the whole eight seconds.
It isn't at all what, you know, the problem that, you know, exists is in B. And that's
if you strike A, you're back to current law. I mean, even the conflict of interest initiative, which was passed way back in 1974 and was an absolute prohibition, was only to boards, agencies, or commissions. There's never been a prohibition against judicial action.
Well, right now, but not current law. Current practice, though, is different than current.
The current ethics law superseded the old law. So
yeah, but I mean, there has never been a prohibition on the courts, ever.
Right.
There's been anything from an absolute prohibition on agencies to a loosening, but there's never been anything on the courts.
B, I think, is really getting at what?
That was Peter's bill. That was the ethics committee variety. That was the state affairs variety. All those in favor of the motion, raise your hand. Opposed.
I will make a technical change in subsection B, where it says this provision does not prohibit an attorney from representing a client in a judicial action.
Right.
I mean, it says otherwise permissible, and there's now no restrictions on what's otherwise permissible.
Right. Do you think that is advocate, advisor, consultant matters, does that include attorneys, provide legal advice, provide counsel for people?
I would say that probably would mean, I'm frankly not 100% sure what it means. I assume, because it says actions, and this whole paragraph is about court actions. It could be if you're a traffic accident reconsultant. I mean, a traffic accident reconsultant expert that you can hire out to a plaintiff's attorney who's suing the state, or if you're an attorney, a specialized attorney, somebody may come to you and say, you know, I've got this patent claim against the state. Can you advise me about it? So.
I have no more problems on this.
I had a couple questions on things that I couldn't figure out in the bill that were asked to me. One is, do we do anything here directly or indirectly on spouses of legislators being lobbyists? I know we had an amendment from Donnelly that I don't think we acted on. In fact, it reminds me, did we act on any of the Donnelly amendments?
Here's what we...
They adopted one of them for the commentary. But
here's the answer. It is not prohibited. It is close economic association. It does have to be reported to the LEC. The wife's expenditures most likely have to be reported to the LEC as Class A income, and they may make recommendations as to the actions or restrictions of the relationship.
That's what I thought.
In that, you may not be able to introduce legislation on behalf of your wife.
Wife's income does not get reported. The source gets reported, the income does.
Right.
Except what about the Class A? Oh, they have
right.
We make that finding. They have to make a finding that there's no undue influence, and there was the money is commensurate with the work done.
Right.
Which and the second question I have is on just someone brought the issue of discharging staff and those kind of issues, hiring and firing of employees. Is there anything here that relates to hiring and firing of employees? I didn't think so, but you know, I haven't reread it again.
No.
Okay, good. That's every question in the world that someone asked me.
Well, good for you.
That
doesn't mean
that was good. I mean, that was
while you're at that, there's at least one other major issue that we brought to both David and I.
Right, and a lot of these
are
turned out.
Are we
going to
bring it up?
We are going to bring it up?
We are going to bring it up.
We might as well bring it up now.
I will bring it up.
Revisit later.
Office lawn.
Don't tell me more. More is not enough. All is not enough.
$40,000 plus per diem plus
$6,000.
That's not enough.
No.
Okay.
The disparity.
Tell us about the disparity.
$6,75, $10,500.
Right.
Doesn't settle in the house.
So what do they want?
One number for everybody.
Oh, that's absurd. Yes, well, sir. How do they do that?
Well, I agree with reading. Theoretically, we're all equal in this process. But we're not all equal. We say one's worth you, because you're from this district, you're worth $10,500.
No.
You from this district, you get $6,000.
You don't get the money.
But you can spend it. You can voucher it through the state. You do get the money because you can voucher it. You can spend it.
But you have so many people, and there's so many things that you can spend the money on. I don't understand how you think we don't serve the same number of people. I need more pieces of stationery than you do.
Well, okay, the argument, and we have adopted the language, which basically would allow an expense that would be deductible under the IRS code.
Well, we used it as guidelines, and I'll be the first to say I'm against
that.
I don't.
Okay. That's very liberal.
Okay.
Too broad.
That's very liberal.
In this, you get two trips back to the district.
That's extra.
Extra.
Over and beyond.
Okay. You may want to write letters back to your district in the way of communicating. But Legislator X from the district far away, single member House district, he may want to take, instead of two trips back to the district, he may want to take three trips back to the district. Four trips back to the district. He flies to the district and it costs him $1,000, $1,500 to fly back to the district, which I would envision that he could be able to voucher. And that sends a lot of mail. It's going to be a hard time in the house.
Okay.
Then I don't think they should get anything.
But, you know, it's...
Greedy.
No,
I cannot
Don't talk about greed.
Okay,
you're getting $10,500.
No, I'm not getting $10,000.
The other day, you were willing to scuttle the bill if you didn't get that amount.
No,
you did. You did say that.
You don't have to give me any. I don't care. Okay? I don't care.
But some of us do. I wouldn't say that because some of us absolutely don't have $10,000 or $6,000 to run our office.
But what if we said that up to 25% of the office allowance could be used for travel back to the district?
No, I think we are allowing up to 100% because we made reference to the IRS code and
order
there. So,
okay.
So I don't think there's a problem with that. With just less money, if that's what you want to spend on.
Let's talk. Let's talk public opinion and the whole ethical question for a little bit. If we got in trouble with some members taking some questionable trips outside, if you go with that theory that office expenses are IRS expenses, I don't have to check with Kelly. I don't have to check with anybody to go
visit
any place that I can have the shred of evidence that was necessary for my education. And
can I just restate it? Because I don't want you to tap what I was saying. The commission will consider the IRS code or whatever it is in its formulating what are okay provisions.
Ledge
I didn't mean to say all
first.
That.
Ledge Council.
Yeah, whatever it was.
However
was I was referencing that term because it isn't clear, but hopefully they'll address that and hopefully it'll come out well. And if some legislator misuses it, it's going to be on his or her shoulders to a degree. But
no,
it's all of our shoulders.
Well,
we are responsible.
Right.
That's a bigger sense. I don't want to be embarrassed by people anymore.
Right.
And I want to, if I can
right.
help.
Well, the commission, we have passed it. I just didn't want to. I'm sorry I made the comments, and we have moved this on to the commission, and I don't think we need to rediscuss it. You have a good point, but the commission will handle it. The commission, the council.
That's
the
where
commission.
We left it. Right.
Now,
that was the
on
problem.
This other point here, I just think we ought to put a proposal on the table and vote. And especially while we're Senator Jones out there, so move quick.
Now, before you make the motion, can we hear the proposal? Can we just talk kind of informally about what your proposal? Do you have a proposal?
Well, my proposal is that we all have one amount, and $6,000 is fine.
I wanted to get a tenor of where we might be headed on that because. If we were, I mean, there's certain levels of, I hate this a little less, I hate this. I hate everybody getting 10,000 a whole lot more than I hate everybody getting 6,000. I mean, I just think we're just asking for trouble. We're on a real
hunt. Doesn't even look good.
What?
Doesn't even look good.
What's that?
To what?
Well, everybody would get 10.
Right.
I mean,
oh,
you
yeah.
can't even justify that.
Right.
With the two trips and the newsletter,
see,
it's already beginning to look a little heavy. I mean, if they started, if the press
yeah.
focused on the on yeah. the financial package in this bill,
I
we would
that.
Not be getting the rosy comments in the front page of the paper.
Well, true confessions, in a double district,
know.
Double Senate district that I serve,
well,
in an election
about.
Year, I'm sending out a lot of mail, my own campaign funds into the office account. I never spent 10,000.
Write a note to Max.
I never did. And so that's kind of a byline that I'm using. I mean, I'd be thinking of a lot of mail to put out probably if I had $10,000, but that's not true for everybody. I mean, Senator Fakes just said...
Well, I'm not saying that it should be 10,000.
Just to contrast it, too, last year I was only here part of a year. I think I spent 9,000, and it's only half the size of a year. So, I mean, just some places, some people send out more mail than others.
Some people piss away their money.
Okay, see, well, the way I envision it is that Davis will say you have stationery on such and such a stock of paper, because I like to use a little heavier stock of paper. You guys shouldn't, I mean, the public shouldn't have to pay for a little heavier stock of paper, but I should have the option of, if I want to, right? So that's what you have to do. You have to say legislative stationery, with or without the gold seal, whatever you guys decide, at such a stock, such
right.
a paper quality,
exactly.
okay? And you can have 5,000 sheets or whatever, okay? So many stamps. Kelly put us on a $1,000 stamp allowance, I think.
And that wasn't enough, for example. I mean, that was it.
Yeah.
That,
and everybody
that's
had
one
more
mailing
than
out of state affairs. I mean, that's
yeah, more than $1,000 worth of stamps
for
the committee.
For what?
Yeah.
Committee.
Every
we
committee got $1,000 worth of stamps.
For what? I mean, yeah, for
committee mail.
Oh. Before it was just unlimited.
Right.
You might want to inquire about how your House Finance Chairman, how much
yes.
they use for their own stationery that's not out of their $4,000.
Right, and they are two now don't use very much. And their current two don't use very much.
Okay, well, let's come up with, do we have a motion on the floor? Let's just vote on it.
Yeah, let's just vote on it.
You want Jones back, or?
I'll tell you
I
what,
just
I'll,
think it's unfair.
I'll move that we What we got something in the on there right now, right?
Right.
Somebody else wants to change. Mike wants to change.
Oh, I want to make it 6,000 for everyone.
All right.
And
how do you justify that?
How about let me just try. You know, we're all equal in this process.
No, we don't have the same number of people. Yes, we're all equal, but we don't have the same number of constituents or responsibilities. How many committee assignments do you have?
I got one.
How many committees? I have four.
Well, that's because you're in the majority. I'm in the minority,
no,
but
no,
I don't have an equal
every
vote on
senator
the House
has
floor.
Got
you
three
have
or
an
four.
Equal vote on the Senate
no,
floor.
No, every senator has three or four committee assignments. It doesn't have anything to do with majority or minority. It has to do with the number of bodies having to cover the committees.
Well, how many committee assignments do you have, Dave? I agree
if you
with
want, if you really, you know.
No, I agree with.
We got House members.
I partly agree.
Three or four. But.
I basically, my concern here is addressing people's concerns, and I agree partially with Senator Fakes. Agree with you. Is there a way? If I can find a compromise, can I put that forward now, or do you want to?
Well, let's have a vote because say somebody wants to use part of their money to fly back to the district. The way it's communicated,
right.
You know, beyond the two trips.
See, I'm
right.
going to go up to 25% can be used for going back to the district for legislative business.
Okay.
See, I'm willing to split it up if you want.
Okay, but if, you know, he flies back home and it may cost him $1,000 and to the Western districts, that's not an unreasonable amount. That
mm-hmm.
does run that
mm-hmm.
much. You to your district can send an awful lot of mail for $1,000.
Well, but I go home to my, I'm still far away from my district too.
But, I mean, it depends on the style.
No,
the way that
well,
you
I don't think
you may decide that just two trips is all you want back
I don't
to
think
district.
It's, I think we all need to get a little bit, the office account should be kind of at a same old level. Ledge Council, the way I envision it is Ledge Council picks out the minimum,
right?
What the base thing, the base expenditures, what everybody gets off the state. The individual styles is you pay for that yourself. And it's going to cost you money. And I guess, and that's the way I visualize it. A Chevrolet deal here. We're not talking about Cadillacs. We're talking about Chevrolet or Ford package office account, legitimate expenditures is the way I visualize, okay? And if you want more than that, you gotta do your own thing, which is what we have now.
Right.
But here's my problem. The way I think of your travel is during the interim is where I see you have trouble in districts, because my district, I can drive around it in 15 or 20 minutes and I'm home everywhere. I can go everywhere in my district. The folks that don't, you know, like Jones has three cities, three little towns in his, and other people, Kodiak, you know that. So there is interim travel within the district there.
Right.
So I don't have any problems with saying at least 25% of that money, or a minimum 25%, could be used for in district travel during the interim, as approved by ledge council or whatever, okay? But the problem I have, the reason your argument doesn't hold much water with me is that right now, today, how do they travel back to their districts? I mean, the compensation package is so much bigger and better and fatter than what they have right now today that I don't understand what the gripe is.
Well, then you shouldn't mind going back. The compensation package is fine. It'll cover the extra four of it.
Well, four is better than, I mean, I spend a lot more than that. So for me, any little amount will help. But I still want the guidelines of ledge council.
Okay, you know, and you had your argument, I have my argument. You're going to run on a problem on the house.
Oh, you
are.
Let's try this first vote. The Miller motion is to make everybody $6,000.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jones.
Is the problem travel?
Not necessarily.
Is the problem the way you handle your travel in the house?
Well, the problem is that people look at this and they see one representative get $6,000. They see another one get $7,500. They look over across the other side and they see a senator get $75 and a senator get $10,500, and they have problems with that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the way we did it was
because... But you can voucher it. You do get it because you can voucher those.
Only under specific...
It was based on the fact that some of those senators have more people they have to contact. It's a bigger cost than mailing. I mean, I don't begrudge that them more money. I thought it was a pretty fair approach. But I heard earlier that the House, some of the members had to spend part of those dollars for travel. And maybe if they didn't have to spend it for travel, they could utilize it to cover those, you know, the mailing or the postage, whatever they are. And maybe that would help that problem you're talking about. I don't know who's bitching about it, but, we said it's an internal problem in between the houses and you sell it there, but if you can't sell it there, I don't know. Maybe some ledge council needs to address.
I'm out in 30 seconds. Tell Larry help me.
Maybe ledge council needs to address the whole issue and turn the travel issue over to ledge council.
I think we know. Let's just take a vote on the Miller motion for $6,000 for everybody. What are you doing? Oh, okay. All those in favor of the Miller motion, raise your hand. Okay. All those opposed. Okay. Motion fails.
I haven't had such experience talking to people about the problems as Mike has, so he's better able to express the philosophy behind it. There is just a practical problem, though, of it, and there is no magic formula. We've talked about lots of them. I'll make a motion that we change the formula from $6,000, $7,500, $10,500 to $6,000, $7,000, $9,000, which isn't a whole lot different, but it sounds a little better if it puts the top under $10,000. It may not solve our problems in the House, but I think will make House members feel a little bit better. The disparity will never be that great. Any House member will either be $6,000 or $7,000, and any Senate member will either be $7,000 or $9,000. So it doesn't sound as extreme.
Yeah. Okay. Senator Fix.
I think ledge council should also say that you only use your office allowance to respond to directly to the constituency within the boundaries of your district, or at a response to a letter directly written to you and asked for a response. You know, those are the kinds of things you have to do. What I don't want is the public sending out a jam-baked flyer around the state to other people's districts when nobody asked me to do it. You know what I mean? business, oh, judiciary, you know. But those are the kinds of things I'm thinking that Ledge Council is going to do.
Right, but that doesn't relate to my motion, though.
But I see that coming, too. Mm-hmm. I see that. Okay,
There's no reason I should be doing mailings to Miller's district.
They'll say, Jen, you've got $9,000.
That's right.
You don't need a judiciary stamp budget of $1,000. Use some of your own $9,000.
Right, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But see, what I think, and what bothers me about the House's approach with you getting more money than I am, is, well, if we are only responding to the constituency within the boundary or a direct letter to you for public dollars, then you just go by the numbers game then. But where I see them having a legitimate gripe is if I start mailing things with my 10-5 over other people's lines and districts, then I can understand the gripe and they have a legitimate gripe.
Right, and this is all just within the idea of reining in costs more than anything. I mean, the point Senator Fakes made previously about the cost of two newsletters, unbelievable what the cost of two newsletters in Jay Curtula's district is. His package probably goes up $12,000 there on top of $10,500. It'd be $22,500 for what essentially is a giant office account then. And this amendment is just a small step to move back a little bit, nothing radical.
Further discussion on the Finkelstein motion, Representative.
You know, I feel like I'm out of step with the House here, but I feel like this is a fair method of dealing with this with the issue the way it is right here.
But I'll propose chasing it 7,000.
It should be Chevron.
What's your rationale?
I made up that formula, or someone made up that formula. Senator Pichot made up that formula. We were also talking about we're getting Cliff Davidson thinks we ought to do it all around a postage stamp and the price of a postage stamp and doing that for him. I came up with one of those. There's a million ways to do this. I'm just proposing a slight variation on the formula, just a slight step downwards.
So
and I'm arguing that
with a modest increment for it.
I think, frankly, if it was under 10.5, I mean, if it was under 10, less than 10,000, probably would be good.
And that's what my meant.
That's what he said.
So I think that's maybe a good idea. But it seems like there should be some rationale in. If it's 6,000 for one district, a graduated.
Well, it is even graduated. You get 1,000 more if you're a 2-member, and if you're a 4-member, 4-house member, you get 3,000 more. So for every extra member, you get 1,000. It's basically based.
Instead of 1,500, he had 1,500.
All right.
The only you understand the jump. Yeah. The jump is we don't have any 3-house district members in the Senate. It's only 2, and then 2
yeah,
more.
Yeah, I understand that. Okay, fine. I'll support your amendment just because I think it would look better than the 10-5. And we can, it's all more than we're getting right now anyway.
Especially with the two newsletters. I'm also not allowed to mention that throws me to take two newsletters down to one newsletter. So I'm trying to.
You don't have to do the newsletter.
No, I have, but it was someone trying to point out the cost of this to me in the House. I'm not bringing that one up.
I'll support your motion.
Further discussion? All those in favor of the Finkelstein motion on the reduced ramp plan, raise your hand. Unanimous.
What are our numbers? 6, 7, 9?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel a lot better about that. I mean, I think, as funny as it sounds, under 10 is good.
No, just Phil and Representative Davis, we were going over House concerns we had.
Excuse
and
me for a minute.
I did all mine. Do you have others, Mike?
No, I covered all mine.
And do you have anything else that you want to?
Catherine, where are those? I may not have anything to do with
that guy. We could go, in the meantime, while you're looking at it, maybe we could
move
on to something else.
Go ahead, that's fine, yeah, let me look at them.
Maybe we could go on to John. Unless, do you two have other ones?
We're happy.
No.
Okay, no, we're happy now, too.
We have more argument.
Our members are just deceitful, they won't tell. They won't say anything.
They're waiting.
They'll find out tomorrow what they're completing.
Yeah, they're waiting.
They'll slide it in and finance that.
Yeah. So you get finance and then more.
When do you have a house hearing, house finance hearing?
It's supposed to be tomorrow.
In the morning?
That's a major
one. Okay, let's do that. Unless people want to take a 5-minute break.
No, let's do it.
These are policy decisions, so we should wait.
Okay, because we have 55 minutes. He has got to come in here.
Okay, let's pile through Johnson for a while, and if we get something controversial, wait till.
Okay, real quick, page 12, line 8.
the sentence as it reads now doesn't make sense. And it's not just a technical change because I'm not quite sure what it's supposed to mean. It's a legislator or employee may not use or authorize public funds, etc., for the purpose of political fundraising, campaigning,
or
to influence the candidate. Okay.
Yeah, I have to insert an or.
I wasn't sure
I will
where
move
the
on
or
page
went.
12, line 8. We insert the word or between campaigning and two at the end of the sentence.
There are no objections to order.
Any objection? Any discussion? Without objection, so ordered. Mr. Gagin.
Okay. Again, this is a consistency matter. Page 17, line 15. The language says, former legislator within 1 year of leaving office may not solicit or accept anything where the compensation is not commensurate. On page 41, line 25, this is for employment by a current legislator, and it says, involves payments that by reasonable objective standards are not commensurate. Which one do you want?
Do we want line 15 on page 17, or do we want line 25 on page 41? I'll wait for a motion. Which one do you like, Brooke?
You're trying to be consistent.
Huh?
I like that one better.
You like reasonably objective? Mr. Miller?
I like that one better.
Would you make a motion?
So moved.
What are you moving?
The reasonably objective.
On page 41, line 25?
Yes,
ma'am. Discussion. Any objections? Mm-hmm. Without objection, Mr. Gagin, you've got line 41, line 25, page 41 okay. Language for page 17.
Okay. That one was taken care of. These are Laureato's comments. Page 44, number D.
I'm beginning to hate some of these sections.
There's a question. Let me see where it is.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Gagin is going through technical legal stuff, and we're just moving conformings, and we've got to do the employee assistant employee, and that's the biggie one. So.
Okay. Well, this section may not be construed to prevent a legislator from making inquiries about the status of a matter or helping a constituent get a benefit or service the constituent is clearly entitled to as a matter of right. Lori's question is, how do you know if you're just making inquiries whether the person is clearly entitled to it or not? I.e. permanent fund dividend, how do you know that the person is a valid resident?
That's right.
Yeah. So what language is
so yeah. What's your
she
recommend?
Just says, how do you determine clearly? I assume...
believed to be entitled?
Oh, that's good.
Is believed to be entitled? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Well, who believes? I would say the
constituent. The legislator believes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I would move on line 23, page 44, that a conceptual amendment that a constituent get a benefit or service to constituent is believed to be entitled. We insert words to that effect as a motion.
Be entitled, just and then drop it to as a matter of yeah. Just drop that out.
That is poor grammar, by the way. That needs to be yeah. Worked. It shouldn't be entitled to. It should be to which it's entitled.
Yeah, to which it's
entitled. Is there any objection to that motion? If not, so adopted.
To which? Did you say to which what?
To which
the
constituent.
Okay, line 48, paragraph 2.
Page 48,
paragraph 2, about line 14, the sentence beginning, a loan that was forgiven during the reporting period must be reported as a gratuity. That, I assume, meant a small loan since, that was when, under the Josephson version, when you were reporting under B, things under $100. I think the easiest way is just to make that, to delete that one.
Which one?
A loan that was forgiven during the reporting period must be reported as a gratuity. Because you don't report, it seems to me if it's under $100, you don't,
right.
It's not reportable. I don't know whether you want to address forgiven loans as...